This is episode 2 of Encounter Points. Welcome to the second episode of Encounter Points. I'm Ken Hellenius.
And I'm Bill Schmidt.
We're glad you've come back to join us for our continuing conversation about joy. Tonight, our goal is to get you to split your sides.
That's because this episode is a chat about humor. We're going to talk about how joy is expressed through humor, why not everything that's funny is actually joyful. And Ken's going to discuss his theory of comedy.
Now, don't give away the punchline, Bill.
I was just setting it up for you, Ken.
Well then, let's get to the conversation and see just where this joke goes.
Yeah, we're on the air. Am I right, Ken?
That's right, we are.
All right.
Well, you know, on the digital air.
On the digital air, yes. Right. Everything has been digitized.
Is being digitized.
Yes. And it will not be published.
No,
the revolution will not be published. No. It's going to be in digits, and it's probably just going to be binary.
I think
zero
so.
And one. And I hope I think I'm going to be the zero.
I think it's kind of like the Lord said, "Let your zeros be zeros and your ones be ones."
Very good. He was truly ahead of a man ahead of his.
I think so.
A Christ ahead of his time.
A Christ ahead of all time.
he
may not be the Christ we needed, but he was the Christ we deserved.
Well said.
Or
yes.
Something to that effect.
I like that, yes.
Actually, was the Christ we needed and the Christ
deserved.
We deserved. So. Exactly.
Thank God. Thank God.
And thank that's God.
I'm going to end it there.
Amen.
We've already started to express the theme of our podcast here, Ken. First, the underlying theme of joy, which is kind of a worthy exploration for any dynamic or active Catholic of today, because it's so much a part of the new evangelization. I think we've come to agree on that. And then taking it into some component parts as we're trying to do as we move on through the series, one thing that comes naturally to people's minds in speaking of joy is laughter and humor. The humor of life is an important instrument of new evangelization, and it, like joy, paradoxically, humor deserves to be taken seriously.
It does, especially, right? All my favorite jokes get so much better when we analyze them carefully. Yeah, absolutely.
Some jokes bear up better under the pressure of analysis than other jokes.
That
definitely.
They do.
Yes.
They do.
But I think yours would definitely fare well in that.
As a matter of fact,
yes.
You know, I don't think we can go any further without a good joke. You ready for this?
I'm ready, yes.
Okay. A pirate walks into a bar, and he's got a steering wheel hanging out of the front of his pants.
Okay. Oh, good.
And the bartender says, "Mr. Pirate, did you know you have a steering wheel hanging out of the front of your pants?" And the pirate says, "Yar, it's driving me nuts."
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
That's very good.
Bit
yes.
much. Okay.
Well, yes.
A pirate walks into a bar.
Okay.
And he's got a paper towel on his head.
Yes.
And he says, "Bartender, can you make me a dirty martini?" Now, if you know anything about a dirty martini, it's got gin or vodka and a little bit of olive brine in it. So the bartender mixes it up. It makes a lot of sense that a pirate would order something with brine, right? I mean, he's from the briny sea. So
That's true. So
the bartender mixes the drink up, and he takes it down to the end of the bar, and he hands it to the pirate. And he says, "Here, Mr. Pirate, here's your dirty martini. Did you know you've got a paper towel on your head?" And he says, "Yar, there's a bounty on me head."
Oh, my gosh. Is there a book of pirate jokes that you're taking this from? This is great.
Now, I'm going to tell you a little something about that. Okay, so I just told you two jokes, right?
Yes.
And the first joke was, you know, a setup and a punchline.
Right.
Okay. And the second joke had the same essential setup, right? It starts with the pirate walking into a bar. this, when I started the second joke, I didn't want you to figure out, okay, it's going to be some sort of, you know, play on words. So what is the paper towel gonna, so what I did was there,
yeah.
I distracted you by telling you the story about the dirty martini and kind of, so then you're no longer thinking about the pirate and the, and what the paper towel might be.
Yeah.
But now you're thinking, okay, oh, okay. Yeah. We're going to dirty martini, whatever. Then I quickly brought it back. See,
right.
So that way I still use the same joke line,
yes.
But I distracted you.
Yeah.
This is all part of my basic kind of theory of how comedy works, how jokes work.
Yeah.
And it is that the comedian, when he's setting up the joke, the setup, he gets you to follow along with him on a train going down a straight track.
Right.
And we're all going down this straight track together. And this is a logical train of thought. So the setup is all about getting you on one logical train of thought.
Right.
The punchline is when, bam, a train comes from 90 degrees, smacks into you.
Yes.
And it's that little moment when you're trying to figure out, does what he just said in the punchline have a logical connection to the train route that I was already going down?
Right.
It's in that moment that there's this psychological theory called cognitive dissonance. That
right.
was first kind of expressed in 1957.
Ah.
Cognitive dissonance says that we experience psychological stress and that this stress has to be let out somehow.
Right.
And in a joke, of course, there's not a lot at stake. So what happens is when our mind finally puts it together, okay, that is another logical way to explain the setup. Okay, I get it. Then that psychological stress can be released. And
yes.
because of the low buy-in, it's released in a non-violent way.
Right.
Although laughter is, you know, kind of, it's a bit of a violent, you know, to your lungs and to your vocal cords.
Although it's supposed to be a stress reliever.
But it is a stress reliever, exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's this theory of cognitive dissonance that
yeah.
I think really explains a lot about humor. And this actually kind of explains, too, some ways why absurdist humor is so weird, right? Because absurdist
yes.
humor actually sets no logical train of thought.
Yes.
You have no way to know when the punchline, if such a thing can be said of absurdist humor, if it, you know, nothing has any relation to anything else. So that's
yes.
why it's you're constantly in a state of psychological stress. And
yes.
so that's kind of an interesting thing. The other thing is, I think this theory also explains why, you know, we often say he who laughs last either didn't get the joke or he who laughs last didn't find the joke funny because he wasn't able to make the logical connection.
Right.
How the punchline in a well-tooled joke, how the punchline actually is a logical extension of the same setup. So this is kind of something I've thought a lot about. Over
I
the
love
years.
It. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. So it is worth taking seriously and mindfully.
Yeah.
I think you're reminding me of something that Steve Allen once said. An interviewer asked him, do people get your show in Boston? And he said, well, they see it, but they don't get it.
That's
so
good.
So
yeah.
humor is humor when people get it.
That's right. You know, and that's really actually a vitally important part, too, because humor requires an application of your intelligence, right?
Yes.
You have to be able to follow the logical train. That's why little kids don't get jokes. They just like to laugh because they see you're laughing, so they laugh too. Once they begin in their limited world understanding to put things together and begin to understand the rudiments of logic, they will tell a joke and they will tell that same joke over and over, always expecting that it's going to produce the same result, right?
Right.
And yet when something is really funny that a kid says, we as adults find it hilarious
yes.
because it's another application of logic,
yes.
just in a different, maybe a limited understanding of logic.
Yes. Very interesting. And part of what makes the children's sense of humor, you know, the out of the mouth of babes, people do find it very refreshing. It's because of the innocence of the child. And I've seen a lot of references to humor as connected to humility. and just the fact that if you take yourself too seriously, you're not going to get certainly you're not going to get jokes about yourself, and you're probably not going to get jokes about anybody or anything, which makes for a pretty dull person and a pretty sad person. Yeah. But I think in a lot of cases today, we're in danger in our culture of taking things too seriously. So, and perhaps losing sight of that goal of humility as well.
I think you're right. There's a humility, humor,
right,
and then the humiliation. All of these words are related because they all have the same base, right?
Yeah,
they all have
right.
They have the H-U-M base, which is from the Latin word humus, which means earth or soil.
Mm.
That which is trampled underfoot, that which we are formed from. Now, of course, and so, yeah, to debase oneself, you know, self-deprecating humor.
Right.
Can be both funny and it can be a cry for help.
True,
know,
yeah.
At the same time. But at the same time, to humiliate somebody is to not respect, not to give them the, recognize their human dignity.
Yes.
Here's the other one. Human. Humanity.
Gee whiz. Has the same, it's right there, isn't it?
Yeah,
yes.
It's all, has that same base root of humus or earth.
Yes. And probably too much of today's humor is humiliation based.
Yeah.
And that might be because we're kind of insecure, taking ourselves too seriously, forgetting the bigger picture of God's incarnate role in the world.
And of us all being equal as brothers and sisters,
yeah, exactly.
The dignity of all humans, of
exactly.
The common human dignity that we share.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of interesting to think about this idea of the creator and the created, us being the created beings, putting one another down.
Right.
But what about the creator himself? You know, could Jesus laugh, for example? Could Jesus laugh as, could you pull a joke on Jesus?
And right. I was
kind of,
that's a great,
you know,
question.
Kind of like, hey, Lord, have you heard the one about, yeah, I created everything. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, I bet he was, you know, a bit of a buzzkill at parties, right?
That's right.
But not, you know, but there's actually, and in today's, the gospel from today's Daily Mass, on the day we're recording this, was Jesus' dialogue with the Syrophoenician woman,
mm-hmm.
Which is told in Matthew chapter 15 and Mark chapter 7. For example, Mark chapter 7, soon a woman whose daughter had an unclean spirit heard about him. She came and fell at his feet. His is Jesus. The woman was a Greek, a Syrophoenician by birth, and she begged him to drive the demon out of her daughter. He said to her, quote, let the children be fed first, for it is not right to take the food of the children and throw it to the dogs. She replied and said to him, Lord, even the dogs under the table eat the children's scraps. Then he said to her, for saying this, you may go. The demon has gone out of your daughter.
Ah.
Now, this story,
mm-hmm.
on the face of it, can be really mean. Like, Jesus looks like he's just being mean and calling her a dog,
yeah.
right? Because she's a foreigner. She's not of the Israelite people.
Right.
I found a wonderful book called, that was just published last year, called Discovering Humor in the Bible by Howard R. Macy.
Oh, I want to read that.
And he says, Jesus does act compassionately. In the end, of course, he heals her daughter.
Right.
But this dialogue is disturbing. Quote, for folks who want to see Jesus as angry or mean or needing to understand his message as well as we do, this is a gold mine. However, if we can recognize the cleverness and boldness of her bantering with Jesus, the Syrophoenician woman's bantering with Jesus, we can see the story in harmony with all we know of his loving presence and action, including his sense of humor. And he goes on to say, imagine them smiling.
Gosh.
The text doesn't give us facial expressions or vocal inflections. We bring those to it when we read the text.
Right.
Imagining Jesus smiling and maybe even being a bit coy rather than being cranky makes a lot of sense, particularly when we remember Jesus' response in so many other kind of situations. But once you imagine them as smiling and having a bit of banter back and forth, it totally changes this story.
Yes, yes. And certainly facial expressions and body language are an essential part of humor and an essential part of conversation,
of
relationship.
All conversation, mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, you and I have recorded. This is our third show together. And the last time we recorded, I was trying a new technique, and we had boxes in front of us with microphones in them. I couldn't see you.
I thought you were just sick of seeing me.
But now being able to see you, I mean, it's especially critical that we see one another in a conversation about humor. Are you getting my jokes,
exactly,
dude?
Exactly, right. Know?
But yeah, it's so critical. So, and we don't get that when we read the scriptures. We don't see, and think about it. This is a story about the incarnation of our Lord.
Yeah.
This is God, the creator of all things, become flesh to be one of us, to be able to see his creation face to face. And us him.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
And so, yeah, we don't get that when we read 2,000 years later,
right.
unless we picture it ourselves and really put ourselves in that story.
Mm.
There's one other bit from this book that I think is really critical,
yeah.
And it's for, especially for our conversations,
uh-huh.
In this context of joy and missionary discipleship. Quote, my colleague Ron also tells me that this passage is very important to missiologists, those who study mission.
Ooh, okay.
Okay. They see this as one of the ways that Jesus was teaching the disciples the wide range of the gospel. The sneaky gentleness of humor as they watched could well have had an enduring, powerful effect.
Oh, my.
And that's this is all from the book Discovering Humor in the Bible by Howard R. Macy, which was published in 2016. I can't wait to pick up the whole book. I found
yes.
these wonderful quotations via the Google Books, but I really want to go back and read the whole thing. I think that's quite insightful.
It is. And I think it was G.K. Chesterton who talked about the unseen, unrecognized mirth of Jesus. And you can understand why Jesus would. Of course, Jesus was the embodiment of happiness at its highest level, and also in constant relationship with the Father in this deep, godly love that expressed itself also through the Holy Spirit. And so mirth, or certainly joy, which is the ultimate theme of our conversations, they were there all the time with Jesus, and you would have to imagine that it would break out occasionally,
yeah.
as humor, especially in relationship with his friends, his close disciples, and that was probably one of the winsome, winning ways in which he engaged them in conversation sometimes.
There was something about him that drew them.
Yes.
To respond to him.
Yes.
Well, and of course, he had this interaction when he was asked, why do your disciples not fast? And he said, can you know, the guests, you know, fast while the bridegroom is with them? They need to rejoice while the
yes.
bridegroom is with them.
Yes.
You know? And that's really, you know, you can imagine they're wandering the dusty hills of Galilee and Judea. They had to have a couple of yucks while they were wandering from town to town.
Absolutely. And the Lord would not have been against encouraging some yucking it up at an event like the wedding at Cana, as he proved
right.
by turning the water into wine.
Exactly.
Right?
He's given us joy to cheer men's hearts, as it says in the book of Psalms.
Indeed.
Exactly.
Indeed. Yes, the Psalms speak a lot of joy.
You put in my heart a greater joy than they have from abundance of corn and new wine.
Oh.
It took me forever to figure out, you pray this as part of night prayer on Saturday night, Compline. Took me forever to figure out why there would be joy from an abundance of corn, and then I realized, wait a minute, bourbon is made from corn.
Ah,
so I don't think they had bourbon in ancient Israel, but now that we do, we see the fulfillment of that prophecy. Is what I like to say.
I like that. I like that.
The old,
yes.
the New Testament is hidden in the old.
And given Chesterton's love of beer and burgundy, as
that's
he's
right,
often said,
and bacon,
and bacon,
bacon.
He also must have liked alliteration.
Exactly.
But given that, it's clear that that there was a joy there. And you've also made me think of another quote from Chesterton, recalling Jesus' own presence on earth in human form, where he said, Chesterton said, if the whole world was suddenly stricken with a sense of humor, it would find itself mechanically fulfilling the Sermon on the Mount.
And blessed are they.
Blessed are they. Happy are they, right?
Happy are they, right.
Yes.
Happy are they. That's right.
Yeah. And I guess that speaks to the not only that sense of relationship, being in relationship with God and relationship with others, but also being in a realistic relationship with the world. And
right relationship with God.
And, right,
too.
Exactly. Right relationship. Yeah. Exactly. That's the key.
Kind of reminds me of quotation from, because everybody knows they're Friedrich Schiller, of course, the German philosopher, or Prussian, really, kind of philosopher, 1759 to 1805. Everybody's got a quotation of Schiller's
absolutely.
To hand, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes. I'm looking for mine. Yes.
He talks about... the aim that comedy has in view is the same as that of the highest destiny of man. And this consists in liberating himself from the influence of violent passions.
Whoa.
And taking a calm and lucid survey of all that surrounds him and also of his own being, and of seeing everywhere occurrence rather than fate or hazard, and ultimately rather smiling at the absurdities than shedding tears and feeling anger at the sight of the wickedness of man.
Oh, my.
Now, this is related to that Chesterton quote, though,
yeah.
Because he talks here about seeing right relationship among things.
Right.
And in the Beatitudes, in the Sermon on the Mount, we are really hearing about being in right relationship. Blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted.
Yes.
You know, it's those who are not mourning, comforting those who are. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied. Well, righteousness lived is right relationship of an entire society, is justice towards all.
Yes.
You know, so this is, as Schiller is saying, you know, we laugh so that we can actually be, you know, so that our passions won't master us, for one.
Right.
So that, again, we're in right relationship in our soul. And so that we can take a calm and lucid survey of all that's around us, so that we can truly understand the world as it is, not how we see it in our most depressed moments, nor even take a, you know, an overly Pollyanna-ish approach
right.
to the world, but to see it as it is.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. But then also so that we do need to release and not be overly depressed. When we see, or angry, I should say, as he says, so that we don't shed tears and feel anger at the sight of the wickedness of man, we need to do something about it.
Yes.
We don't need to just cry and get angry. We need to actually bring this righteousness to the world, bring justice to the world.
Yes.
That's
yes.
just an idea.
So part of what we're showing when we evangelize through humor is a sense of reality about the world, a kind of recognition of its tough spots and its joyful spots. Just as we kind of said in our discussion of joy previously, that joy is inseparable from tough times as well, and sometimes shows itself most uniquely in those times. And I'm also reminded of a quote I found from Hugo Rahner, only because I had left my Prussian quote book at home. Hugo Rahner, in a book called Man at Play, said, "Only meaningful work provides the soil in which festivity flourishes." And it's actually found in a commentary on this is found in David Fagerberg's book, Chesterton is Everywhere. He says, only meaningful work provides the soil in which festivity flourishes. In other words, Chesterton was joyful because he was quite the busy working person and very engaged in reality in every possible subject that
he
was writing about.
Columnist,
exactly.
Author, yeah. Commentary.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And gee, now I'm forgetting whether it's Fagerberg or Rahner whom he's quoting. But if you if you take the work away from life, festivity becomes mere frivolity, and
yes.
we become frivolous. It's kind of what you referred to early on as absurdist humor, which we have to guard against, I think, in our culture today. Even humor has to be well-grounded in the good and the bad of life if it's going to have an evangelizing or even just uplifting effect for our fellow persons in the world.
Yeah, I think that's entirely right, because if your entire, well, as it says, meaningful work, well, what's the opposite is either non-meaningful work, right, or not to work at all.
Exactly.
And if you're not working at all, then what are you retreating from? What are you celebrating?
Yeah.
What are you recreating from?
Because, ooh, I like that.
Because
that's a good
really
word too,
you
right.
know, festivity is recreation.
Yes.
Recreation. And this is all I'm reminded of Pieper in the work, the Basis of Culture.
The Basis of Culture, yes.
And he talks, I mean, it's really, he has another work too, I think, called A Theory of Festivity, in which, but he talks about festivity as being a release from the work that we do. And he actually quotes Aristotle there. He says, we are unleisurely in order that we might have leisure.
Yeah.
So in other words, we work so that we can actually be at leisure.
Yes.
Which is a total upheaval of the way we do it now, right? We work 5 days a week, work. And then in the weekend, well, I've got to get all the rest of this stuff done so I can go back to work.
Yes.
No, that's backwards.
Yes.
And now we're, you know, I don't want to get too far astray from the concept of comedy, but it is festivity. Festivity is where we are joyful, where we have fun.
Yes.
And it's time set aside for that, you know?
Yes.
And so, yeah, it really requires that we think about why are we laughing, and in the context of our faith and of sharing our faith and being missionary disciples.
Right.
To draw this back to that, in what ways can humor be used to draw people and to help spread the word, to draw people into the interior life of God,
right,
in the church and in relationship to Christ? And so, you know, how can our humor be used that way?
It's a good question. One of the answers is what you referred to earlier as kind of a pressure valve for life. When it's good to kind of spice up our conversations and our hopefully missionary activity and communication and relationship building with the occasional joke or the occasional witticism, much as I think of Bishop Sheen being a master of that in his old TV show, which obviously must have been successful because his ratings were good, and I think he even supposedly beat out Milton Berle on an opposing channel.
Wow.
One time when he made the news when his own show beat out the Milton Berle.
See, life really is worth living.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Yes. And then other folks have done the same thing. Mother Angelica on EWTN is known for having said some pretty tough love kinds of things,
sure,
but also having
but also
made
witty.
Very witty.
Yeah.
Made her audiences laugh an awful lot. And then the other example that occurs to me is Bob Hope. And in that case, the work that he did was so grounding in the reality of life that his humor was all the more powerful and perhaps you'd say poignant, because he was the great comedian who went on those Christmas tours to Vietnam.
The USO tours.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it turns out that I did not know this early on, but he was a strong Catholic who later donated a chapel or shrine within the Basilica in Washington, D.C., to Our Lady of Hope. And,
of course.
And that connection. Wonderful. Yeah. There, I think he was also being kind of humorous.
That's funny, isn't it?
Right?
Yeah. There's no Our Lady of Hellenius.
We're going to have to work on
that.
But there's the connection between humor and hope and joy.
Right.
And also all of those tough times that that Bob Hope saw in person. He was willing to make that self-donation of bringing comedy where one would not normally find it in
right.
in Vietnam.
Very much yeah. where it was a release.
Where it was a release.
A pressure
yes.
release.
So that was yeah. evangelization through
no, that's good.
Release. And I think Mother Angelica and Bishop Sheen also used it as just kind of an attention getter. Humor can be an attention getter. Bring people back into conversation, back into that train of thought, almost literally speaking, where you get people to you've talked about comedians kind of getting their audiences to hop on the
Come
train
with
them.
On
what's your reference to
yeah.
that? I like that. I like your point about the comedians kind of taking you on their train and then. Suddenly, there's a train coming at you, and there's what is it called? Cognitive dissonance.
Cognitive dissonance, absolutely. Yeah.
But ultimately, the cognitive dissonance is relieved.
It's released, and then you feel that you're changed ever so slightly.
Yes.
Now you have a new way, a new perspective to look at things.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And what is cognitive dissonance if it's not a call to conversion? A call to penitence, to use Franciscan language, and these are ultimately very powerful tools of evangelization too, and ways that we can be of missionary service to other folks.
I think you're right.
Yeah,
dude, I think this has been a great conversation.
Oh, thank you. Likewise, I agree. But it would only be fair if I hit you back with a joke.
Oh, please.
I just thought of it, really. When St. Paul wrote his epistles, why did he occasionally use italics?
I don't know.
For Ephesus. Sorry. That's just what occurred to me at this time.
I don't know that I can. I got nothing. I got nothing. That's brilliant.
But thank God for humor.
Thank God for
humor. Maybe not for that particular joke, but thank God for humor.
Exactly.
And thank God for this conversation.
Indeed. We'll chat again next week.
You are very good. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you for listening to the show. You can subscribe to hear future episodes at our website, encounterpoints.com. Our theme music is Leaves by Airtone, licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution License. We hope to encounter you in the next episode of Encounter Points.